This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do.
And today's guest is actually a return guest, and I'm very pleased to introduce you to Dr. Deanna Brann. Dr. Brann, welcome to Mind Talk. Welcome back to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
Dr. Deanna Brann is a clinical psychotherapist, an in-law expert. Yes, in-laws, we need those. And she is the author of Reluctantly Related Revisited, Breaking Free of the Mother-in-Law-Daughter-in-Law Conflict. And certainly, Dr. Brann, it seems to me that literally everyone and their mother and mother-in-law should be taking a look at Reluctantly Related Revisited.
Well, I definitely agree, and I've said this many times. I think even when people say, well, I have a great relationship with my in-law, it doesn't hurt to read it too, because you never know when it's going to start to change, and things can change after several years, after 10 years, after 5 years. It doesn't matter. There can be a trigger that can cause things to start to go in the negative direction.
Would you say that the relationship with in-laws in and of itself is more potentially tension-laden and fragile than a lot of other relationships that we all may have experience with?
I think that particularly the mother-in-law-daughter-in-law relationship, it seems to be the one that has the most impact. It's the most fragile, and it affects actually every relationship in the whole family. And the reason that these two women have such a difficult time is that, one, they didn't choose each other. You know, they didn't choose to be friends. They didn't choose to get involved with each other. They are really there for the same purpose, which is they both love this particular man. And what happens is they tend, without even realizing it, they tend to compete for the influence that they have over him. And then things start to bubble up and really create a lot of problems.
So it's interesting, because it sounds like you're saying that the relationship that men have with their in-laws is potentially less fraught with angst than the one that women have with their in-laws.
Definitely. And the reason for that is that men view relationships very differently than women. Women take relationships extremely personal. They're much more intimate on an emotional level, whereas men, the focus of their relationships are really about activities and doing things. You know, they'll watch sports together, or they'll play sports together, or, you know, they talk about their job or something. It's something kind of outside of themselves that really bond them or connect them with one another, whereas with women, we focus on, you know, how does she treat me? How, you know, does she show me respect? Does she not show me respect? Is she being nice? Is she not? We focus on the interpersonal part of the relationship and take everything very, very personal.
So, sounds like we have a little work to do today.
Yes, women typically do in this, because we love our relationships. I mean, relationships are very important to women. And, you know, if you're already kind of struggling with somebody because you didn't choose them, you know, you've got to find a way to have a relationship with this person regardless. It makes it a little more challenging.
All right. Well, let's get to the sort of the beginning of this. And you say very early on that trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong is not only not a good or useful idea, but it ultimately leaves everyone feeling badly. Why is that?
Well, the reason is everybody wants to be right. And so if you focus on, well, I'm right and she's wrong, you're going to end up with a stalemate, because your in-law is going to be doing the exact same thing. And trust me, you will never convince somebody that they're wrong. It rarely happens, let me put it that way. And so the more you try to make your point and show her, if she would, you know, we'll say to ourselves, if she would just listen to me, I could show her where, you know, why I'm so right here. well, she's not going to care about that. She's going to dig her heels in, and she's going to, no matter, even if you are right, she's going to stand her ground and not let go of that. And so what ends up happening is both parties want to be right. Everybody wants to save face. And so now we have a stalemate. And so now nobody's talking to each other because we both have to be right. And we need to get above that and focus on, instead of, you know, is it more important to be right or is it more important to have a relationship with this other person? And that's what you have to focus on.
And it's, and this is an issue both for the daughter-in-law as well as the mother-in-law.
Absolutely. It's on both sides. Both sides. And it doesn't matter who ends up taking that higher road. It really doesn't. It really matters that somebody does.
Oh, boy. We probably need 2 hours here. All right. Let's begin at the beginning. Let's begin at another beginning. You say that it is important to take a three-dimensional look at what's going on. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is you want to, again, you know, you want to look at it from your own perspective and your own feelings, okay, we get that. But you also have to look at it from your in-law's perspective as well. She's going to see things differently, and she's going to interpret them differently. And so it's important that you try to understand it from her perspective, because that's her world. That's how she's looking at it. And it doesn't matter if she's right or wrong, it's her perception. So it's important that not only are you looking at yourself and where you are in it, but also understand her perception of things. And then you also want to take, what is my ultimate goal here? What am I trying to achieve here? And by putting all three of those things together, then you're in a position to really start to change the relationship and make it into what you want it to be.
All right, but let me take on the role of the daughter-in-law for a moment. My mother-in-law is way older than me. She's from another era. I kind of think she might be from another planet. And really, I don't care what she thinks. What do I do with that?
It's funny you say that, because I have a lot of daughters-in-law who say pretty much that. And, you know, she's not that much older, but they still don't care what she thinks. What you have to look at from a daughter-in-law's perspective, first off, you have a lot of power as a daughter-in-law, because you have the son and you have the grandkids. So you have a lot of power.
Okay.
And not to let that go to your head, okay? But the thing that a daughter-in-law needs to look at is, one, this is her husband's mom. And if she loves her husband, she needs to figure out a way to get along with his mom, because he also loves her in a different way, but that's his mom. And if, again, taking it outside of yourself for a moment, how would you feel if your husband refused to have anything to do with your side of the family? You know, and just openly said, I'm not gonna spend time with them, I don't wanna have anything to do with them, you know, and you can't either. I don't think a daughter-in-law would be real thrilled with her husband saying something like that, but that's what daughters-in-law will say oftentimes. So the first thing you have to do is look at, you know, this is your husband. You love him. And if you love him, you need to find a way of getting along with his mom, because she's important to him, and that should make it important to you. The other thing that daughters-in-law need to look at is, you're a role model for your children. So if you are showing, not telling, but you're showing your children how to get along with in-laws, or how not to get along by avoiding them or fighting with them or whatever it is you're doing, you're teaching them through your behavior that it's okay to treat people that way. And be careful, you may end up being treated that way when your child becomes an adult.
Well, that's interesting, and that certainly puts another level of awareness, I would say, to the whole dynamic. Because, you know, as you know, so many times adults forget that what they're saying and doing is being observed by their children, and that their children will ultimately model that.
Exactly. We don't even think our children are noticing. But believe me, they see everything. And if they don't always see it, they feel it. They feel the tension between you and grandma, You know, they feel, you know, what's going on, the stress. You know, they hear the parents fighting over because of grandma. You know, they see that mom won't have anything to do with grandma. They pick that stuff up, and it doesn't matter what your words are. It's your behavior that makes the difference.
All right, so indeed, this is a very powerful learning lesson, actually, for everybody in the family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
So whoever you marry, you're actually marrying their family. That really is true on some levels.
It really is. And not that you're going to spend tons of time with them necessarily, and especially because in our society, everybody's so mobile, most people don't even live close to family anymore. But it's when you are with them, or when you do interact with them, how is that? And you need to figure out a way to make that work on all sides.
Talk about the story of Dan and Charlene and mother-in-law Janet, who was Dan's mom. Janet really seemed to be a bit of a pill. She cries, she argues, she pouts, she manipulates. She's a real pill.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you have an in-law like that, what do you do with that? Because really, you don't want to have anything to do with it. You want to pretend she doesn't exist.
Correct. And sometimes the son feels kind of the same way. but it still is his mom. Okay. So the best thing you can do is, one, you and your husband need to be on the same page. All right, and this is really important. And oftentimes when you have a mother-in-law like this, and I call her off the wall Wanda, that's my name for her, because she is so off the wall. When you have a mother-in-law like that, the best thing that the two of you can do is you need to set boundaries with this woman. You need to make sure that she hears the boundaries that you're setting and that there are consequences for those when they are not followed. And, you know, because let me give you an example. For example, you know, if she, I think in the story, she wanted to come for 3 weeks or, you know, weeks at a time or at least a week and a half, and they said 3 days, and she was pouting and carrying on about it. If you let her get her way, then what you're telling her, it's no different than a child if you think about it. She's throwing a temper tantrum, and if you let her get away with it, what she's learning is, oh, if I throw a temper tantrum, I will get what I want. So you just need to make very clear boundaries and do it nicely and say, you know, 3 days, that's all we can do. And if she says, well, that I need to come more, blah, 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 then you say, well, if you can't do it for 3 days, then we can't schedule it, you know. So you set that consequence. The key, though, with someone like her is, if you start to explain yourself, and that's what most of us try to do, we say, well, if I can just get her to understand, she'll understand why I'm saying this, and she'll be fine. She won't. It's important that when you have a mother-in-law like this, that you do not get into a discussion, you do not explain, you do not try to get her to understand, because the more you talk, the more she'll wear you down, and then you'll end up giving in. So it's important to just set the boundary, set the consequence in advance so she knows that it's her choice what she does, and then let her do what she does.
That's interesting, because as you describe the interaction between her and Dan, she just kind of wore him down and wore him down and mm-hmm. wore him down until finally, you know, what he said to her was, well, we can't come to you, but why don't you come to us? Which, of course,
exactly.
sent his wife into a tailspin.
Exactly. And that's how it happens. And it seems real subtle, but it's how they get what they want. And they will do, that type of a mother-in-law will do whatever it takes to get what she wants. And so you've just got to kind of put some emotional distance there, because she will guilt trip. She will be passive aggressive. She will do manipulative things. And as long as you know that those things are going to happen, one, you don't have to take them personal, because she'll do them with anybody who doesn't give her what she wants. All right. So it's not personal for you. She'll do it with anybody. So if you keep that in mind, you can put some emotional distance there, and you can just set the boundary and be done. But you're right. She wore him down.
All right, with a mother-in-law like this, she is used to arguing and haranguing and doing whatever she can until she gets her way. So if the children, the adult children, set a limit and don't explain it to her, isn't she going to keep going after them until they burst into an explanation, no matter how useful or useless it might be?
No, what happens, she may try, but if you don't give that to her, if you give her, all you do is say, Mom, you know, and I would have the husband and the wife do this together.
Okay.
This is one time when it's really important that they do this together so that she can see the united front between the two of them. So, you know, what the husband would want to say is, you know, Mom, I hear you, but this is what it is. You know, do you want to come for 3 days or would you rather not come? And by doing it that way, what she learns is, if I don't do what they want, I'm not going to get anything. So she'd rather take the 3 days than nothing at all.
All right. And then she comes there annoyed as all get out because she didn't get her way. Does it make sense for when this kind of mother-in-law, for example, doesn't just show up after the wedding? She's like this from the very beginning.
Yes, she is. So, she can't help herself.
So one should not be surprised. Does it make sense to have a conversation even before the marriage, maybe even before the engagement, about how the two of you are going to negotiate mother or mother-in-law?
Yes. I totally think that's a great idea because, one, you're right. This is not a surprise. The biggest surprise is that the son is so used to it, he usually avoids his mom as much as possible. So when the girlfriend, fiance, wife comes into the picture, she's like kind of blown away because she's not used to this kind of a person at all, and she gets more upset and it bothers her more. It can cause some friction between the two of them. If they talk about this in advance, they can create a strategy from the get-go, which will work out even with the wedding plans, you know, even with any of those things.
So if you're in a situation where you've met this off-the-wall Wanda, you're talking to your potential mate, and he is dead set against doing anything any differently from what he's already done with his mother, do you have a decision to make, or should you just sort of go forward?
Well, at that point, it really becomes more of a marital issue and less of a mother-in-law issue.
Okay.
And so then you have to address what's going on with him that he's not willing to do something different. Because obviously what the family typically does is they just give her what she wants because it's easier than dealing with her. You know what I'm saying? So that's what he's used to doing, or totally avoiding her altogether. So, you know, if he's not willing to do something different, they've got to deal with it from a marital standpoint. And she needs to help him see that, hey, I'm looking at this from as an outsider. I'm seeing something differently than what you see. So, you know, we need to do something different because this isn't going to work for me. And then they need to problem solve together.
So it sounds like every premarital experience needs to include how both parties are dealing with the in-laws.
Yeah. And that goes for, you know, her side of the family as well, because one of the biggest issues that come up with her side of the family is the daughter-in-law typically wants to spend all of her time with her family.
Right.
Well, then that becomes, you know, a marital issue from that side because that's not very balanced.
So he doesn't want to deal with that. She doesn't want to deal with what she doesn't want to deal with. And I could just imagine the children in the middle of this sort of feeling like ping pong balls.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, well, how come we don't ever spend time with this grandma, but we always spend time with this one? And, you know, they don't understand. They feel the tension between their parents. They feel the tension between the in-laws. I mean, and they're just confused.
Dr. Brand, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, let's pick up with that, how you deal with this kind of a mother-in-law and what she communicates to your children about you and about how she feels about you. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Dr. Brand, the impact of a off-the-wall Wanda on the children, there are going to be times when that kind of, well, when grandparents are alone with your child or your children, is there anything that parents need to say to their children to sort of offset the kind of negativity that off-the-wall Wanda is going to bring into the children's lives?
Well, yeah, I think there are things that parents need to think about, and more than likely the kids are going to already know that something's up with grandma, all right? So they're kind of already going to know that. But I think when you find out, and what will typically happen when your kids, particularly when they're a little older, they will come and ask you, you know, well, grandma said this, and you're not yet. So you'll start to hear these things, and then you can kind of explain, you know, grandma's, you know, a little on the grouchy side right now. She's not real happy with us, you know, and just explain it for a child to be able to understand. But then I think you need to have a conversation with grandma, all right, the mother-in-law, and you need to let her know, look, if you're going to be saying things to the kids, then we're not going to let you be able to be around them because you're confusing them. And again, you give her that's a boundary, and then the consequence is then you can't be around them. So again, she's going to have to learn that if I want to spend time with my grandkids, I have to be a little more careful about what I say.
Okay. So this boundary...
She's not going to like that. Okay.
No,
but
she's not.
But what she'll learn is, if that's the only way I get to see my grandkids, because you have to follow through. That's the thing. If you're going to give a consequence, you got to follow through with it. So if you follow through with it, then she's going to learn, okay, I know what happens if I don't do what they say.
All right, let's talk about the situation with Scott, Jenna, and Sharon, because that's kind of a different situation where the mother-in-law kind of completely blames the daughter-in-law for what she sees as a break in the relationship. And that's a very common occurrence as well.
So she's
holding her child blameless, but it's that daughter-in-law who's causing all the problems. What do you do with that?
Right. And sometimes, I won't say sometimes that's true. I mean, sometimes it kind of is true. But the husband does have a part here that he needs to look at, you know. And so this is when the husband needs to step up and start to show his mom that he's emotionally separating from her, which has nothing to do with his wife. And that's because that's what is really going on in most of these cases. It seems like it happens about the same time that a couple gets married. But men have to emotionally separate from their moms, particularly their families, but their moms specifically, because that's how they become men. They need that separation to be able to be the man that they're going to be. And they're going to have their own family, and they're going to see their wife and their children as their family, not their family of origin, like they did maybe when they were young.
Okay.
So this is where the son has to help his mom separate from him and see that he's separating from her and that it's not his wife that's causing it, if she's not.
We've got some challenges to deal with. what would you say one should actually do if she really thinks that she really, I mean, hate is a strong word, but what if she really feels like she just hates her mother-in-law? It's going to be hard. I mean, she'll set a boundary, which is, I never want to see you ever again in life. And that's mm-hmm. not going to mm-hmm. work. What does she really do with that? What can she say to her spouse about that?
Well, I think before a daughter-in-law says anything, I think what she has to do is she has to look at why she feels so strongly about this woman. You know, I mean, if you think about it, if we feel that strong, emotionally strong, have that kind of a strong feeling towards another human being, that means that they matter enough to us to have that kind of a feeling. I mean, if you think about it, if someone doesn't really matter to you, you don't hate them or even come close to hating them. You may not like them, you know, they may irritate you or whatever, but there's not that intensity behind the emotion. So if you have that kind of intensity, you have to look at why is it so intense? And 9 times out of 10, that emotion has more to do with the daughter-in-law, that intensity,
okay,
than it does about the mother-in-law herself.
So, and I would suggest that that's a good approach to take with anyone with whom you find yourself having a very strong reaction. There's mm-hmm. a reason
exactly.
for it. There's something underneath a reaction that's that strong.
Yeah, because there's been no reason. You don't even know this woman per se. I mean, how can you have that strong if you think about it, you know? So there's got to be an underlying piece there that has to do with you as an individual, you know, and that's the part you need to look at before you ever talk to your husband or even think of dealing with your mother-in-law or avoiding or deciding to avoid her or whatever. You know, you've got to look at yourself and be honest about that, because it's, again, you go back to this is your husband's mother, and, you know, she matters to him. Right or wrong, whether you like it or not, that's the cards. That's who you married, and that's his mom. So you need to figure out a way to make it work.
And my guess is that if you have that kind of a very strong reaction to an in-law, you've probably had that kind of reaction to somebody else in your life as well. So try to figure out who that somebody else is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What we do is we carry those things around with us. And so if your mother-in-law triggers you that much and creates that much intensity, negative intensity in you, it doesn't belong to her. You haven't known her long enough for that to be the case. So it has to be somebody else that you know through your life that has stirred that up to begin with. And that's where you want to begin.
Okay. Is it that the daughter-in-law then winds up feeling wrong or blaming herself for having this extreme reaction?
Well, she shouldn't.
Okay.
Because we all have stuff. You know, she's human. She's going to have stuff. But, you know, to me, the more important thing is that you do something about it. I mean, blaming yourself isn't going to be real constructive. It's not going to be very productive either. So, you know, be grateful that you're willing to, or appreciate the fact that you're willing to even look at that, because most women won't.
Most women won't.
Yeah. It's easier to blame the other person.
Well, that's true.
Than it is to look at yourself. And that's what most people do. It's just easier.
That
it must be them, because it can't be me, right?
But then, of course, you're stuck with it because there's nothing for you to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
You make...
And then it becomes part of the marital issue.
And I think that would probably go nowhere good very quickly.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
You make a distinction between a bond and a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
This is an interesting concept that I find really very fascinating. Oftentimes, a daughter-in-law can, in her, she feels threatened by the mother-in-law, and what she feels threatened by is the bond that this mom has with this daughter-in-law's husband, the mother-in-law's son. She gets confused. She feels this bond between the two of them, and she assumes it's the relationship. And the difference is this. When you have a bond with somebody, it's a much deeper connection than a relationship. You can have a bond with somebody that you never see or rarely see. You may see once in a blue moon. Maybe you've never seen them, but you can have a bond with them. And what I'm talking about are, you know, examples would be trauma survivors, okay? People who've been in wars. You know, they have this bond that they can't even describe. It's just they feel that connection with this other human being because of what they've maybe been through together. Doesn't mean they have a relationship. Again, they may never see each other. They may never talk to each other, but that bond is there. A relationship, on the other hand, has strings attached. It has, you're connected, but it's something that's constantly growing, evolving, changing. It may end, a relationship can end, a bond doesn't. So there's a huge difference. And as I say, relationships are conditional. You have to work at relationships. You have to make them work. You have to invest in them. That's very different than a bond, which you don't have to, because what connects you is much deeper than anything to do with a relationship.
So your spouse could actually have a bond with a parent that is not as active as a relationship would be, but in a lot of ways it sounds like it might be more difficult to sort of change or disrupt or put limits around, is it?
Well, yes, and the question would be, why would you need to do that?
Okay.
For example, if you what happens is the daughter-in-law will feel this bond between her husband and his mom and not really understand what that is. And so she thinks, oh, they're too close. But if he, let's say, only talks to his mom once every 2, 3, 4 weeks or something, you know, but they have this bond between them, you know, what's going on here? I mean, why should she care?
Okay.
It's not like that bond is hurting their relationship. She may feel that way because she's threatened by it. She's feeling, oh my gosh, she's too close to his mom because look how when they're together, they just seem to connect. You know, okay, but they see each other once, you know, every few weeks, or maybe they don't see each other every six months because they don't even live close to each other. You know, so that's the difference.
For the daughter-in-law who experiences the bond when they do get together and feels left out, what does she do?
Well, I think one of the things she has to do is she has to start, again, taking a step back. She needs to do some self-reflection.
Okay.
You know, and why am I threatened by this, you know? If he was talking to his mom every day, I'd have an issue with that. Then that's a different thing.
Okay.
You know, or if he's seeing his mom all the time, that would be a different issue. But if he's not, you know, she needs to look at why that's such a threat. You know, and again, maybe it has more to do with, is he making her feel, the wife, feel number one? You know, that's becomes then a marital issue. So, you know, as long as she knows she's feeling number one, and part of that has to do with her own self-esteem. If she feels good about herself and she's comfortable in her own skin, she's not going to be threatened by the bond between mother and son.
Gotcha.
But I want to talk about the flip side for a minute.
Okay.
I think it's important that the mother-in-law, she gets caught up in this bond that she has with her son as the relationship. And so we used to talk all the time. Why aren't we talking all the time now? And so she gets all wound up about that because she knows they have a bond, but she's confusing it with a relationship and expecting them to be talking all the time. And yeah, he may have done that when he was growing up because he lived in your home, so you were talking to him all the time. Or even maybe when he went to college. But bottom line is the mother-in-law has to understand the difference between the bond and the relationship, and let him have his relationship with his wife and know that that's separate than the bond she has with her son.
So it sounds like what the at least one of the takeaways at this point is that both mother-in-law and daughter-in-law and the spouse need to, and the son really need to do work on this relationship. Not assume
yes.
that this is a match made in heaven for everybody.
Right, right. You know, and there are some relationships that when they do come together, they're fine. And it does happen, and the reason it's not by accident, it's that everybody, when you have a relationship like that, everybody is comfortable in their own skin. Everybody knows, you know, their role. They understand their position in the family. They're comfortable with who they are. And when you have that dynamic going on, it can go just fine. A mother-in-law can do things and say things, or the daughter-in-law can't, and the other person doesn't get all riled up.
Gotcha. Which sounds like it would be ideal, quite frankly.
But it happens more than you think.
I
mean, it's not an ideal that's not obtainable, because it is. I've talked to many women who get along great, but it's because they're comfortable in their own skin. You know, the daughter-in-law, she's not threatened by her mother-in-law. She knows that her husband, she's priority to her husband. She feels it, you know. So it does happen.
One of the, at the end of every chapter in Reluctantly Related Revisited, you have action steps. And I noticed that one of the action steps is advising the daughter-in-law to take a look at when she is most likely to blur the relationship with her in-law and someone in the past. So again, mm-hmm. this is part of what I think we were talking about a moment ago. If this is such a trigger, take a look at when and how this trigger perhaps first showed up in your own life prior
exactly.
to mother-in-law, and then you can do some different kind of work with it.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a really important step, because we all do that. I mean, it's just part of being human. So, you know, I don't want women to think, oh, if I do that, then there's something wrong with me. No, we all do that. We all have done it, and we'll all continue to do it. The key is to catch yourself, you know, and recognize it and be able to get past that and be able to then see your in-law for who she really is versus who you're portraying her to be because she reminds you so much of another person.
Okay. So if you find yourself saying, for example, my mother-in-law is just like fill in the blanks, that's actually mm-hmm. a piece of information and an important piece of information for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the first key right there. And you've opened up a door that now you know who you need to be thinking about and what you need to be doing with that. So absolutely.
And then again, it sounds like we're talking about, which is what we have been talking about, using one of my favorite words, which is curiosity. You're not blaming yourself for making this connection. You're curious as to how this connection comes about.
Right. Right. Exactly. Because it is a curiosity. I mean, we should be curious about ourselves, why we do what we do, why we feel the way we feel and at different times. I mean, that's, to me, the fun part about human nature.
It's really getting at who you are and how you came to be who you are now and who you were then. And there's always an opportunity for change.
Absolutely. And we're always growing and we're always changing. And, you know, to do that in a way that you can be self-aware while you're doing it, to me, would be that's the greatest way to do it, because then it's purposeful. You're changing and you're making the changes you want to make to create what you want to create.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Dr. Deanna Brand, who is author of Reluctantly Related and Reluctantly Related Revisited. We'll be right back. we've been talking a great deal about mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. Let's talk a little bit about some of the male characters. Let's talk about self-assured Andy. Is he the ideal?
Yeah, he's the ideal. He's the guy who, he is comfortable with his in his own skin. He has emotionally separated from his mom. And he's very comfortable with who he is and very comfortable in his manhood.
And in the middle, Michael, how comfortable is he with himself?
He is not as comfortable. He is in process of emotionally separating from his mom. He wants to kind of please everybody, so he ends up pleasing nobody, of course. He tries to help his wife understand his mom, which she hates, because then it feels like he's taking her side. Or he tries to have help his mom understand his wife, and that makes mom feel like he's taking her side. And so he really is pleasing nobody, and part of it is because he's not sure about where he fits at this point.
You have made the point that the number one relationship, the number one priority in his life needs to be his wife.
Correct.
And there are people, parents, grandparents, spouses, you name it, who don't believe that, who believe that the number one priority is not the wife and that she needs to fit in. So I just want to be clear that you are intending to say that the number one priority in the marriage needs to be for each of the partners, the partner.
Absolutely. And yeah, because I think to me it's just as important. We talk about husbands needing to have his wife be his priority, but the wife needs to have her husband be her priority. And one of the problems I'm finding with a lot of daughters-in-law is that they, I won't say choose their family, but they want to do everything with their family. And they're constantly talking to their family, and every holiday and every event and every everything is with her family. And that's just as damaging to their marriage as if it were the husband doing that.
So for the daughter-in-law who says, but my mother was really a much nicer person than your mother. And honestly, my sister is so far advanced over your brother. Why wouldn't you want to spend all of our time with them as well? What's the matter with you, husband?
Well, I'm sure a husband wouldn't say this, but so I will say it. But bottom line is, when a wife does not separate from her family, as I always say that the husband has to separate from his, but when the wife doesn't separate from her, she ends up staying emotionally childlike as well. And so if she's going to become the adult woman she's meant to be, then she needs to emotionally separate from her family, because otherwise and if you think about it this way, this is the best analogy I can make. I don't know, and everybody has done this. When we have been adults, and I'm talking young adults, and we go back home to our families, or I guess this can happen at any age, and we go back, let's say, to a family where all the siblings are coming in town, and we're going to mom and dad's, and we're all hanging out, all of a sudden we fall into old patterns. We fall into that family thing of who played what role in the family, and it's almost like we're 15 again. So it's really easy on an emotional level, if you do not separate from your family, if you're spending all this time with them, you don't have a chance to emotionally grow up and grow away from your family and become who you need to become. So as much as the husband needs to do it, the daughter-in-law or wife needs to do it as well, because she's not growing up. She's not emotionally maturing into the woman he needs to be married to or should be married to. So she needs to do it for the marriage, if nothing else. It doesn't mean you don't spend time with family.
Right.
But there needs to be some balance here, And, granted, of course she's going to be more comfortable with her family. She grew up with them. You know, she knows them. They know her. You know, there's no way she's not going to be more comfortable with them. But that doesn't make it right that she spends all the time. Or, you know, again, what are you teaching the grandkids? That these people are fine and these people aren't. They're still related to you. Does that mean there's something wrong with the grandkids because they're related to these people you won't even see? You know, so you get all caught up in that kind of stuff, too.
You know, the other thing that I certainly know comes up, I've seen it in my office a great deal, is when, and it's along the same lines that we're talking about, one or both of the spouses will go to a parent or to ex, whomever it is, but often it's the preferred parent for the emotional stuff, with every single thing that goes on in the relationship. Mm-hmm. So if he was home late for dinner, or she spent too much money, or things far greater than that, there's this one person that they go to and just tell everything. So it's like you're married to three people. You're married to
exactly,
your spouse,
yeah,
and to whomever your spouse confers with. You know, on the one hand, you want your spouse, it seems to me, to have friends or people that he or she can connect with. On the other hand, you don't need to have a third party in your marriage.
Exactly. And the problem is you may forgive your spouse for whatever transgression, you know, you're talking about. But these other people who are not married to them, you know, will not forget, and they may hold a grudge, and they may not only hold a grudge against your spouse, but they may end up getting angry at you, because why would you put up with someone who treats you this way, or who did this, or who did that, because they're not going to let go of it. And so now you've created a mess. And the other thing about that is, if you're always going to somebody else besides your spouse to talk about this, you're really letting off steam. And so you never then go to your spouse, who you should be talking to about the issue, because you feel better. You talk to this other person, you feel better, you go home, and it's like it never happened. So the best thing to do is talk to your spouse. That's the person who can help you solve the problem.
I would suggest that if you find yourself, and I'm sort of talking about red flags, if you find yourself saying to your spouse, well, even my mother said, or even Susie said, that's not a good sign.
That's not a good sign, no. And as your spouse, the spouse, I would assume, would be pretty upset, because they're going to feel very violated, you know, because it's like you're sharing all this stuff with, you know, that would feel very uncomfortable.
All right, what should in-laws think about, just in terms of the grandkids? Because, you know, there are many, well, let me just stop it there. How should an in-law approach grandchildren? Because they're not his or her children. They're the child's child, but they're still children.
Well, I think first you have to understand the rules that the parents have. And it's really your job to abide by the rules of the parents. Now, that's not to say as grandparents we, you know, do our special little thing sometimes, because we're grandparents and we do spoil the grandkids to some degree. But it has to be within the bounds of what the parents are going to be accepting of, because they are the parents. And, you know, they have a right to raise their kids the way they want to raise their kids.
So I'm thinking about what could be called an extreme case, where the parents don't particularly have any religious leanings one way or the other. And the parents' view is that the child or the children will move in that direction if and when they do. And perhaps the grandparents are very connected to a particular religion. So when the parents aren't around, they're shuttling those kids off to church or to synagogue or to temple, to whatever they believe is really important. Is that a huge error, or what's that about?
That would be a huge error. I think if you want to do that, if you feel the need to do that, it's important that you let the parents know that you want to do this, and make sure it's okay with them.
And if the parents say no and you think it's a horrifying mistake, you have to abide by it.
You have to abide by it. They're the parents.
So, in fact, the grandparents have kind of a difficult, I mean, a difficult road to walk as well. They've got to be very mindful of many things. I mean, this relationship is sounding like it can be really complicated.
It is, because you're dealing with several different levels. You've got the in-laws, and then you've got grandparents. So those are different roles that you play as an adult. So you do, but I don't think it has to be hard. It doesn't have to be difficult. It really doesn't. I think, you know, again, if you're respectful of the parents and the fact that these are their children, you know, and more than likely, they're not going to be that far off from what you might want to do. There may be some things, absolutely, that you don't agree with as a grandparent, but you're not the parent.
For those spouses who, whenever there is an argument, will go to their respective parent for guidance, or for, I don't understand how he could do that, or I don't understand why she's so upset about this. Not a good thing.
Not a good thing. Not a good thing. You're bringing somebody into your marriage that it's not good.
So it sounds like your marriage needs to be yours.
Yes.
Not your parents, not your friends, needs to be yours.
It needs to be yours, and you two need to make it what you want it to be, and, you know, including other people in your marriage, and, you know, it's only going to backfire on you anyway, because then they're going to start giving you opinions and things like that that you may not want to hear. And then what do you do?
Exactly. So short of an abusive relationship where you kind of do need to reach out for help, and not necessarily to your parents, maybe to professionals,
right.
keep it yours.
And if you really feel you two are at a stalemate, then get into some marital counseling. But, you know, that's not the end of the world. And, you know, really what marriage counseling is all about is helping you figure out how to do things in a way that works for both of you. It's about learning how to communicate differently than what you're doing. Because whatever you're doing isn't working, why not have someone help you figure out a better way to do it? I mean, it's that's really what it's about. So if you really are stuck, reaching out to family or even friends is not wise, but, you know, that's what a marriage counselor is for.
And going to a marriage counselor doesn't mean that your marriage is necessarily a mess. It means you're wanting to improve it or change some things.
Exactly. I've had people in marriage doing marriage counseling. Their marriage is fine, but they want to make sure it stays that way. You know, so they, you know, they want to keep on top of things. And so they, you know, they come in and deal with some of the minor things. It's better to deal with it before it becomes a huge issue. Because what often happens is couples wait so long to get into marriage counseling that the damage has been done to such a degree, it's really, really hard to repair that. So why not catch it before it gets to that point so that you can make your marriage better? That's what it's all about.
I find very often, I would suspect that you do too, that when couples come in for marriage counseling, it's really to get the counselor to give them permission to separate.
Absolutely. That's because they've waited so long to even come in to deal with the issues. Yeah.
So you don't want to wait until you're looking for permission to leave, because if you're looking for permission to leave, you've on some levels already made the decision to do that. You want to get in sooner
exactly.
rather than later.
Yeah, and you know, again, it's not to feel ashamed that you have to go to counseling. To me, that's a very wise thing and very smart thing that you're able to recognize that, look, this is bigger than us. We all have our expertise, you know. And so choose someone who has an expertise that you don't have. Marriage counseling, you can't be an expert in that just because you're married, you know. So take advantage of the expertise that's out there and catch things before it gets to the point of your marriage being over, because you're right. Most people wait until it's that bad, and then they want permission to leave.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that's not a reason to come into counseling.
Let's talk about, for a second, Weird Wendy. We've talked about a lot of the other characters that you've identified, but we haven't really talked about Weird Wendy. Who's she? Okay. What's her issue?
Weird Wendy is someone who has very few friends. She typically does not get along with her own family. She doesn't get along with her husband's family. She really has a tendency of wanting to isolate herself and her husband and children, if they have children, from everybody else. And she has a tendency of distorting just about anything and everything to fit why she doesn't want to be around you. She's very, very difficult to deal with. You can deal with her, but she's very difficult because she does, I mean, even the nicest thing you could say can be distorted by her.
And again, that's going to show up before the wedding day.
Yes, absolutely. That's not something she can hide and it just come out afterwards. I mean, in many ways, the husband or boyfriend, fiance, he would have seen those kinds of things even before, while they're dating. I mean, because it just comes out.
Right, right, absolutely. So I think in sum, what you're saying is that clearly there are ways to deal with the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship so that it's not such a painful conflict, and you just need to work at it.
Yeah, my biggest thing is, one of the things, I'm a firm believer in this, is that you can change any relationship just by looking at your own behavior and changing some things about you and how you act so that you can then get what you want. Because the way it works is, if one person in a relationship changes their behavior, it forces the other person in that relationship to also change their behavior. They can't continue to act in the same way if you're acting differently. So by focusing on, okay, what do I want to, how do I want this interaction to go between us? You think about that, and then you go, what do I need to do to get that result from her? And so you start to change yourself and change your own behavior, and by doing that, you will change her behavior and you will change the relationship. So you don't even have to challenge or confront the other person, which is, I mean, no one likes to do that. So this is an easier way to shift the relationship and change the relationship to be better for both people.
Absolutely. Dr. Deanna Brand, I'm sure we will have you back again for your next book. So I hope it's already in the works, but if it's not, you know, I can wait a little bit.
I would love to come back. I enjoyed it.
Is there a website for folks who want more information about this?
Sure. The best way to get there is go to inlawsos.com.
Okay. That's a perfect,
an easy one to remember.
Absolutely. InlawSOS.com. Dr. Deanna Brand, author of Reluctantly Related and today's conversation about Reluctantly Related Revisited. Thank you very much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
My pleasure.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Remember that Mind Talk comes to you daily as an educational public service, which is available on demand whenever you choose at myndtalk.org. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, you can send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is not intended to take the place of any work that you may choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. It is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications, and I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, that is precisely exactly what it is. Unacceptable. Take care.